It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Today we're listening back to a couple of favorite conversations on this program. The first one is with Brent Westermeyer. You might remember it was back in October of 2019 when Westermeyer uncovered an error in an iconic image from World War II. He discovered that one of the six Marines who helped raise the American flag on Mount Suribachi at the Battle of Iwo Jima in the South Pacific was misidentified. That soldier turned out to be a man from Brooklyn, Iowa. His name, Harold Pye Keller. Let's listen back to how Brent made this discovery.
Well, we've all seen it. It's that famous image of Marines struggling to raise an American flag during the Battle of Iwo Jima in the South Pacific more than 70 years ago in the Second World War. That image of a group of six men became one of the most famous of the war. And this week, we found out that one of the Marines in that iconic image was a man from Brooklyn, Iowa, Marine Corporal Harold Pye Keller. For 74 years, Keller has been misidentified as someone else in the photograph. Brent Westermeyer is a private military historian, a Johnston man who works for Wells Fargo. Brent worked with the Marine archivists and others to identify the error. Brent Westermeyer joins me now. Brent, welcome to the program.
Ben, thank you very much, sir.
When did you start working on this?
When I started reading the book, Flags of Our Fathers, in 2002.
So you read this book, and how did you get to the point of wondering about the identities and whether they're correct in this iconic image?
Well, a couple points here. First and foremost, when Bradley wrote the book, you now have hundreds of thousands of eyes looking at these pictures that historically we saw the flag raising, the Rosenthal photo, but there were other photos that were included in that book that were very, very interesting and intriguing to me from a visual standpoint, especially the gung-ho photo, which was the stage photo taken by Rosenthal and also taken by George Burns. There's two gung-ho photos that were taken by George Burns, who was another photographer on Mount Suribachi that day.
So, Brent, there were multiple photos of this flag rising?
That is correct. There was another famous photo. We call it the flag exchange photo that was taken by Bob Campbell. That photo has been available for years and years, and it shows the number two flag going up while number one is coming down, orchestrated by Harold Schreier, who was the first lieutenant on Mount Suribachi that led the 40-man patrol up the slope.
Okay, so let's go back to this misidentification, now correctly identified as Harold Pye Keller of Brooklyn, Iowa. Why were there doubts that man had been misidentified?
I'll start from square one. When I first started looking at the gung-ho photo, I started to notice inconsistencies with more or less equipment versus the equipment in the Rosenthal photo. So Franklin Southley is on the number two flag. In the gung-ho photo, Franklin Southley is raising his M1 Garand, and he has a bayonet on the end of it. In the Rosenthal photo, which was taken moments before the gung-ho photo, he has his M1 Garand over his right shoulder, and there is no bayonet on the end of it. And the reason it is because it's not Franklin Southley, it's now Harold Schultz. So those types of items kind of led me down the path, and there were many, many other individuals who were noticing the same details.
Okay, so how did you arrive at Marine Corporal Harold Pye Keller as the correct person in that image?
There was footage taken by Bill Janaus. Sergeant Bill Janaus, the Marines, took the footage, and that's very famous. We all have seen it. When I watched that footage, I look at the number two position. The number two position is where Harold Pye Keller is being placed. I saw a Marine that was larger, and if you look at pictures of Rainey Gagnon, he is a very slight man. He's very small in the shoulders, in the chest, in the waist. So I always had a feeling, a deep feeling, that it was not Rainey Gagnon. So then I go back to the gung-ho photo, and I look at the gung-ho photo, and my theory was if you raised the second flag, the likelihood of you being in the gung-ho photo would be highly probable, and the answer is that's true, because all six are in the gung-ho photo. And I noticed Harold Pye Keller, and I noticed the size of Harold Pye Keller, and I also noticed the fact that he's wearing two bandoliers from his right shoulder to his left hip, And if you watch the Janaus footage slowly, you can see at least one bandolier from right to left hip. So in 2014, I had the belief that it was Harold Pi Keller and started to pursue that with my counterparties that I've been working with.
Okay, so this goes way back to 2014, and your counterparts, these are Marine archivists?
They are. It's very unusual. One of them, who is a true military historian, he is an Irishman, lives in Wexford, Ireland. His name is Stephen Foley. He became my pen pal when we both, basically I went to the Iwo Jima website, I saw some posts, and I thought, this guy's seeing exactly what I'm seeing. I left a post, and he left his email address, and we started to correspond in 2014.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you've been working on this for about five years. When was it solidified? When was it absolutely confirmed that this is Harold Pi Keller?
Well, first of all, I needed my pen pal's buy-in. And that buy-in came in August of 2016. And that's when Stephen Foley said, I agree with you that it's Harold Pi Keller. We were not done. There was more work to be done. What's important at that particular day, it was actually that day, is the day that I determined where Rainey Gagnon actually resides on Mount Suribachi. And he is in the Campbell Exchange photo, and he is reaching for the number one flag as it is being lowered. And he is the one who actually takes the number one flag down the mountain that morning, or that afternoon at that point in time. So there was more work to be done, and that was basically trying to find more photos. Stephen Foley, the Irishman, secured two photos of Pi. One was taken by George Burns of the two Marines who first came over the crest of Mount Suribachi. They are Howard Schneider, killed in action, and Harold Pi Keller, and it's a great, great photo of Harold Pi Keller. He then, in the middle of 2017, secured another photo taken by Bob Campbell, taken moments after the exchange photo. We refer to it as the salute photo. And the reason it's the salute photo is we see both Harold Schreier and Boots Thomas saluting the second flag. And what's important about this photo is we can clearly see who's in the number two position. And if you do a side-by-side comparison of George Burns' photo and of Bob Campbell's photo, it is Harold Pi Keller without a doubt, without having any type of forensic evidence. Any common American would say, yeah, that's Harold Pi Keller.
Wow. Okay, I want to talk about a couple things before we end this conversation. I have a feeling I could talk with you all afternoon.
This is yes.
We don't have that kind of time. I want to talk about Pi Keller, and I want to talk, make sure, let's get the context of this right, because for you as a military historian, you know all about Iwo Jima. Tell us about the context in which this flag was raised. What kind of battle was Iwo Jima? We know it's one of the most horrific of the Pacific theater. And what did it represent?
Well, it represents for the United States freedom. It represents our independence. From the Corps standpoint, not one Marine who was on Iwo Jima wanted to go on that bond tour, first and foremost. So it's a very, very important battle. There were 6,800 Americans who lost their lives on that particular island over February 19th through March 26th of 1945. 20,000 Japanese were killed, and they were basically dug in through a network of caves throughout Iwo Jima, even though we bombarded the heck out of it with both planes and with naval battleships. There were still a lot of Japanese left on that island, and their mindset at that point in time is no surrender. Take 10 if I can.
Wow. Okay. To Pi Keller, he survived the war, unlike so many in that battle, returned to Brooklyn, Iowa, returned to his new wife, right?
Correct. Ruby and he were married in 1944.
Mm-hmm. When he was on leave.
That is correct.
Keller died of a heart attack in 1979, only 57 years old. So I guess, Brent Westermeyer, what remains is Harold Pi Keller, the person. What can you tell us about him, about his service during the Second World War? Why he was left out so long in this identification.
First and foremost, the Marines were not about, I want to be famous. They're about, I want to be with my brothers, and I want to serve with my brothers. Harold Pike Keller, as I have heard from Kay, his daughter, very, very humble man, a family man, a man that's committed to his community, served in many, many different capacities, was the fire chief in Brooklyn, Iowa for a period of time. So bottom line is you have a man from the greatest generation who truly represents that generation of being a humble, kind individual, and that's what I've heard from his family about how Pike Keller truly was. Bruce Braley, his father served with Harold Pike Keller, and Bruce has nothing but the best things to say about Pike because he knew them.
Mm-hmm. So talk more about the descendants of Keller, his family. What did they say about this news, this identification after 74 years?
Kay and Wayne. And
Kay is his daughter.
Kay is his daughter. Wayne is his son. There was another son who's passed, and I apologize. I do not remember his name. But in their living room, above their couch, was the picture of the gung-ho photo. And Kay was always very interested in why. She knew that her father was in this photo, but why is it in their living room? And the point is, Ruby knew. And we know that Ruby knew because she wrote a letter to a friend, which is actually in the Marines book that they just released. And in this letter, she states to a friend, received a letter from Pi. He helped plant the flag. He was pretty pumped up about it, basically.
So Ruby...
Ruby knew.
Ruby knew. His wife knew. Let's talk about this finally as a military historian, you don't do this professionally, but you're a historian of military items. This revelation that you discovered, that you helped change in terms of identification with working with Marine archivists, what kind of feeling does that give you when you discover this in one of the most iconic images of the Second World War? I have to imagine a shiver or goosebumps or something.
A bit of gratification. Again, I feel for the Gagnon family. I think there was a rush to identify, and there was probably a lot of pressure that were put on Marines, and they may have said something that they may not have wanted to say. So I feel for the Gagnon family based in New Hampshire, but at this point in time, I'm very, very excited about Kay and Wayne in Brooklyn, Iowa, especially with what Brooklyn, Iowa has gone through in the last year.
Brent Westermeyer, private military historian, lives and works in Johnston for Wells Fargo. Brent, thank you so much. Fascinating.
Thanks, Ben. I appreciate it.
My conversation with Brent Westermeyer from October of 2019, describing how he identified Harold Pi Keller as one of the Marines who helped lift the American flag on Mount Suribachi in the Battle of Iwo Jima during World War II. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Well, since the coronavirus pandemic has put most sports on pause, we thought it would be nice to bring you one of our favorite sports stories from August of last year. That's when the Cedar Rapids Sizzlers won the 2019 Granny Basketball National Championship. Let's relive this great moment in Iowa sports history. Basketball, a fast-moving game of pivots, quick jump shots, fast breaks, certainly a game for the young. But wait, just a minute. Granny basketball continues to grow. Yes, I said granny basketball. There are now more than 450 players on 37 teams in 9 states: Kansas, Louisiana, Minnesota, Missouri, Oklahoma, Texas, Virginia, Wisconsin, and here in Iowa. Granny basketball not only provides fun and competitive exercise for women over the age of 50, it's also an avenue for charitable giving and a way of preserving the history of 6-on-6 basketball. Joining me in the studio, 3 national champion athletes, 3 members of the Cedar Rapids Sizzlers, the 2019 winners of the National Granny Basketball Tournament held in Lawrence, Kansas in July. Sue Hartley, Diana Marker, and Margaret Buter are sitting across from me. Congratulations, ladies.
Well, thanks.
Very well done for Cedar Rapids and for your Sizzlers. This was a 16-team tourney.
featuring 200 women from 10 states, ranging in age from 50 to 87. Who wants to take the lead? Tell us about the championship. I understand the final game was decided in overtime against the defending national champs, the Harper's Ferry Fireflies.
It was so exciting. You have to know that we played five games that day. And for old women, that's a lot. We got down to the final game. We were ahead by five that final game, and the mayor was there even and rooting for us. And they tied it up, so we had to go to overtime. And I think our stamina just beat them.
So overtime means the clock was extended, or was
4 minutes? Yep, we had a 4 minute overtime. Of course, I fouled out in the last 30 seconds, but we still won by one basket.
Congratulations. Yeah. So it, what was the final score? Anybody have that?
53-51 was the final score.
Okay, Margaret. So I see your team has also won the national titles in 2012 and 2015. This is a sports dynasty. No? Were you on that team? Were any of you on that team as well?
Yeah, we were.
All three of you were.
No, I was not.
Okay, Margaret you're the newcomer.
Not. Yes.
But Diana and Sue were.
Mm-hmm.
Very good. Yeah. Okay.
And we've had a lot of the teammates together now, and it flows. You know, there's a rhythm. You've got to watch our forwards play. It just flows there.
Tell us about how this is different than basketball people think of today, because this is, as I said, preserving the history of 6-on-6 basketball was the basketball that women played before Title IX changed things, right?
Mm-hmm. Margaret?
Diana, tell us how that difference is, Diana.
Okay, 6-on-6 in high school was three players on one court and three players on another court, forwards on one court, guards on another court. Now we have two players in the forward court, two players in the center court, and two guards in the guard court. You're not supposed to run, no jumping.
A lot of passing,
yes.
Okay, so passing, uh-huh. And you sort of stay in your sectors, your region.
Mm-hmm. We hurry a lot.
You yes. hurry.
What we is it, hurry a lot.
What
we,
does that mean?
We move very quickly, even though we're not running.
What is the age range on your team?
We figured out on our way home after we won the national championship that our average age is 66. So we have a 56-year-old player and an 81-year-old player.
Mm-hmm. Are you all previous basketball players from earlier in your lives?
Unfortunately, I never had the opportunity to play basketball.
That's
Margaret
speaking.
From Williamsburg High School, and we did not have basketball, so the only sport I had was track. And I did try out at UNI, but did not make the team. But mm-hmm. So this is living the dream that I get to play granny basketball.
Tell me about Margaret, for you, for instance, or the others. How did you get into this? I would imagine that, you know, as you get older, you might have some concerns about getting in a competitive game like basketball. Did you have those concerns? Diana?
Yes. I was actually recruited in 2005. I was one of the original members of our team, but that was definitely a concern. But as I saw the others playing, I thought, I can do this.
Yeah.
And the person who started our team is a sister of Barb Trammell, who started the whole league in 2005. Mm-hmm. And the person was Linda Turper.
Mm-hmm. And Linda also, this is Sue, mm-hmm. and Linda Turper also recruited me after I had retired. I taught with her actually at Pierce Elementary School. So she grabbed me and I said, oh, this is fun. It's exercise, keeps me out of trouble. And I had played other sports. I did play in high school back in New York. Mm-hmm. We had high school.
Did you want to?
I was going to say that Williamsburg was celebrating their sesquicentennial, and I believe that one of my classmates, actually Roberta Wardenberg, happened to be on the Cedar Rapids Sizzlers team, and they said, Williamsburg, you got to get a team together for this sesquicentennial. And as it turned out, then they continued to have a team, and that's how I started to play with them mm-hmm. to begin with.
So you have a lot of fun together, socializing, exercise, but there's also this charitable side of it. How does that work?
You want to go?
Diana?
Well, the teams can set up benefits. Sometimes they might play against teachers of a school, police groups, firemen. And we have the organizations that have benefit from our games are, help me out with this, Sue.
We have had Bridge Haven and Waypoint and Horizons Meals on Wheels. We've got Grateful Grannies who do school supplies to kids that are in need.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And we all know as we get older, we all face some health challenges. And I know you're okay with me sharing this as well. Diana, you connect this with a major health challenge that you faced years ago.
Yes, in 2010, I was undergoing treatment for lymphoma. And everybody connected with Granny Basketball was extremely supportive. And I really needed a distraction. And Granny Basketball was a great way for me to think about other things besides myself.
Mm-hmm. How long do each of you think you'll continue to play Granny Basketball? Margaret, you're the newcomer in this group.
I want to continue as long as I can. My mom was turning 90, and I'm hoping I'm still playing when I'm 90.
What about you, Sue?
Sounds good to me, yeah. And I already informed my pastor that I'm going to die on a court, so be ready, you know, whether it be volleyball or basketball or pickleball, yeah.
Somehow, on a court, it will happen. All right. Mm-hmm. In a blissful state, I understand your meaning there. And Diana, what about you?
As long as they'll put up with me, I'll be there.
Okay, very good. We're going to go out with some basketball music, but I want to thank you and congratulate you again, three national champion athletes, three members of the Cedar Rapids Sizzlers, the 2019 winners of the National Granny Basketball Tournament held last month in July in Lawrence, Kansas. I've been speaking with Diana Marker, Sue Hartley, and Margaret Buter. Congratulations, and keep the dynasty going, I guess. You'll have more competition in the future. I think this Granny Basketball is something that will really catch on.
I think you're right. Thanks so much, Ben.
At its very best. Basketball has always been my thing. I like Magic Bird and Bernard King.
That was a conversation from last year. So what's up with Granny Basketball this year? We checked back in with Sue Hartley of the Cedar Rapids Sizzlers. They were able to complete 1 week of games during the first week of March this year, but the rest of their season and the Granny Basketball National Tournament were canceled due to the pandemic, like all other sports. Sue mentioned this still makes them the defending Granny Basketball National Champions. Well, coming up after a break, we'll listen back to my conversation with historian Troy Stolp about the long and complicated history between Omaha and Council Bluffs. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Back in just a moment.